Without further ado, I will give you guys the floor to talk all things keeper leagues, aught new, and all that good stuff here with the Keeper Cut Podcast.
Well, thanks, Miles. We're really excited to be here. And as Miles said, for those of you who don't know, we host the Keeper Cup podcast. We do focus on keeper leagues, auto new leagues, sort of that space in between redraft and dynasty. We do talk a little dynasty here and there, but that's really our niche. And we're going to take some questions today. So if you're in the chat and you've got questions about your keepers, I mean, Pete, we've got our Listener League 2 keeper deadline tomorrow. The keeper deadline for auto new leagues is Wednesday, so that's coming up. I've got a CBS league that's coming up. Are you busy making all your keeper decisions?
Yeah, unfortunately for that one that is due this week or tomorrow or whatever it was, the Roto League, there's not a lot of decisions for me to make because it's a little ugly. But yeah, full blown, definitely ought new cut deadline, just fully focused on that really.
Yeah, so get those questions in. If you got questions for us, put them in the chat. Miles is going to help queue those up for us. We've got a couple that were sent in via Twitter. You can find us on Twitter at Keep or Cut. That's Cut with a K. You can also find Pete. He was smart and put at Pete B Baseball right there in his name. I didn't put my Twitter handle, but it is at Chad Young. You can probably figure that one out. While you're getting those questions in, though, we always kick off our episodes by talking about jersey numbers. We just go with our episode number. This is episode 125, which means we're talking jersey number 25. And Pete, I mean, like, I have a soft spot for Jim Thome, so I would love to give this to Jim Thome, but episode 25 is Barry, right? I mean, that's it.
Yeah, he's the GOAT. He deserves it. This is the Barry Bonds episode here on PitchCon.
Yeah, I guess last week we went on 24. We gave it to Manny Ramirez out of personal bias as a Pete being a Red Sox fan, me being a Guardians fan.
The writers are going to hate us.
We're going to go big this time, though. We'll go with Barry because he definitely deserves it. While we're waiting for some of those questions to come in here, let's tee up something that we got from Twitter. This comes from Nicholas Mosuto. He says, we've helped him out before, which is good. I hope we give him good help, not bad help. And he said he's got a team named Rakib Kronengirth. That's a great team name, by the way. In Auto New League 481, trying to contend, wants to know, should he keep or cut a $50 Jose Ramirez? I think I'm in good shape to contend, he says, but concerned about the lack of wiggle room. Now, it's a Fangraphs points league. For those who don't play Auto New, that's the scoring there is sort of linear weights based. So if you think about like what makes a guy good in WOBA or WRC plus, like it's going to be similar stuff there. You get points for hits, extra base hits, home runs, walks, stolen bases. You lose points for caught stealing. For pitchers, it's innings pitched, walks, hit by pitch are bad, right? Walks and hit by pitch are bad. Strikeouts, home runs are bad, hits are bad. You get points for win or for saves and holds, not for wins though. This team currently has 33 of their 40 spots filled. They have $377 spent. So he's looking at 7 spots and $23 to spend. There might be some other cuts coming, but I don't know. Like I looked at this roster and I saw a couple of guys. I'm like, I might let them go. But I think the big question here is, clearing out $50 by cutting Ramirez and opening up all that cash to fill up that roster could be useful. So what's your reaction, Pete? Have you looked at this roster? And what do you think?
Yeah, I did. I looked at it ahead of time and my initial thought was like, I'd want some better starting pitchers. He definitely has some names there that we're either a little concerned about or we're not completely convinced, right? He's got Cole Reagans, who we're going to talk about later at a great price, $4. Grayson Rodriguez, $10. So like two guys who could be awesome, but might be a little bit of touch and go in the early going. Then there's Joe Ryan, who had that terrible second half after looking amazing in the first half. Was it the groin injury? I don't know. So my thought process was cut Jose Ramirez and get a little bit of a guarantee at the top of the rotation. But up until this point, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot that's going to be available to him in the auction. So maybe this is a case of you hold on to the player and maybe you try to find a trade partner later on. I mean, my gut tells me I would cut Jose Ramirez in this situation. I think the offense is plenty good enough. I'd want the flexibility. I don't see the pitchers available yet.
Yeah, I think those pitchers will likely come available in the next couple of days and right at the deadline, right? I mean, the reality is these cuts, especially in a league like this league, number 481 has probably been around for quite a few years. These are experienced managers. They're going to wait till that deadline and make those cuts. I see a couple other guys here. Like, I am not a huge Walker Buehler fan. At $19, I would rather have that money back as well. But I do think you raised the right issue, which is with this roster, like who's the ace? It might be Grayson Rodriguez. It might be Cole Reagans, but like who's the guy you're leaning on? the challenge for him is third base. I mean, he's going to go into this with his roster right now. He's got Christian Walker at first, $6, great price there. An $11 JD Martinez as his util, sounds good. Then he's got a middle infield with Bo Bichette, Matt McClain, Mookie Betts, Spencer Steer, and Bryson Stott. Now, he could move Steer to third base, move Betts or Steer to the outfield. Like, he's got some flexibility there. And so my take would be, I think aligned with you, cut Ramirez. I just cut a $50 Ramirez on a team I'm hoping to compete. But I would cut Ramirez and see if you can. I just think he can get away with a less elite third baseman, but he needs more pitching and he probably needs another outfielder. The top of his outfield is really good. He's got a $63 Acuna. That's fantastic. And a $16 Michael Harris, who's great. And then he's got $7 Kerry Carpenter, who I like. He's got a $6 James Outman, who I'm not super high on, but I get it. He's got a $3 Chaz McCormick, who, again, I it's a totally useful piece. And that's it. And so he's got some work to do in his outfield and his pitching, and I would use that money to do that. So let's jump to one of the questions from the chat. This one comes from Big Red Rocket. It says, in a startup auto new league, how much would you pay for Ronald Acuna Jr. or Shohei Ohtani? And these are, they're such different questions, right? Because Acuna is, right now he looks like he is far and away the best fantasy asset, and it literally doesn't matter what format you play. He is just a star. And Ohtani would be the guy challenging him, or not, if not above him, if he were healthy and pitching this year, but you sort of assume he's coming back to pitch maybe. So I don't know how you look at this one, Pete. What are you paying for those two guys?
I didn't see the question in the notes. So is this for what format?
He just has a startup auto new. So I think it's more generic. Let's assume points.
Okay. I mean, Ronald Acuna Jr. last year was what, like $100 player or something crazy like that. So, I mean, I'm pretty easily going $70 on him. I spent up for him a ton in our podcasters league last season, and it still looks like now I have him at a bargain. So I guess $70 is when I'd start thinking like, all right, it's getting appropriately priced, but is this really where I want to start building my team from? Because I'm only going to have so much money left over. Ohtani, a little bit different. Obviously, in terms of a baseball player, he's the most valuable player in baseball. But with the questions about pitching, and you know, when he does come back and pitches next year, you know, you're not getting any of that value this current season. Instead, you're just getting a really good utility player. So it's all about planning ahead. It's stuff that we've talked about in the past, and maybe $60, because I feel like he can still be a $60 hitter. And then if he does come back and he's just pitching and he gives you, you know, 120 innings in 2025, well, now you have him at a huge bargain. I don't know if $60 is going to get it done in a startup.
Yeah. So I've got pulled up some data. There's, you know, the Auto News Slack community has been doing some mock drafts, and those are all startups. So it's been an interesting way to get some data points and how at least that community, and it is a very specific community. It's not, you know, your general audience. So worth keeping in mind, but average price on Acuna in those drafts, and there've been three of them so far, is $71, almost $72. Average price on Ohtani has been almost $58. And so you're right in that right spot of sort of where he belongs and both of those guys. And I think that the read in Ohtani is right. I go back and forth on Ohtani between feeling like, hey, I can get an elite utility player right now at a relatively fair price. Like high 50s is not a bad price for what he does offensively. And then if he comes back as an ace again, like you've got a great, great value for the future. Second significant elbow injury, there's a little bit of risk there. So I'm trying to be a little cautious, I think, in Ohtani, and I think that range is okay, but I'm likely a little below that range on average, just because he ties up your utility spot this year, which isn't ideal, and I'm just not that confident that he comes back as the full-fledged ace he's been next year. So that was another one. That was one from our listeners. Let's get back to one of the ones we got from Twitter prior to this. This comes from Jeff. Question for the next pod. To what extent does the free agent player pool or other drop players inform your keep or cut decisions? So we actually started to talk about this a little bit with the last question about that team in League 481 is like, you look at the free agents, there's no one there. How much does that change how you think about things, Pete? Do you shift up your cut decisions based on who's out there?
I can't really say that I do, because it's so rare that I actually know who's out there. I mean, in Otnew, you can get an idea as teams start to cut players. But a lot of formats, like the one that we're in, our two listener leagues on Fantrax, like nobody really cuts anybody. They just select their keepers, then the date passes, and then you know who's available. Right. I think you want to pay attention to position scarcity because things can get really ugly, right? Like we're going into this season, and the consensus among fantasy podcasts definitely seems to be that like high-end starting pitching and outfield feel thin. So if you're in a keeper league and it's like one of our listener leagues where everybody's keeping nine players or can at least keep up to nine players, like you got to understand that outfield is already thin, and who knows how thin it is now after this deadline. So I can't say that it changes anything, but I'm maybe more acutely aware of those positions of weakness. So I might be more inclined to keep, you know, a Chaz McCormick over an infielder who I kind of like the value of and maybe like a little bit more, just because I'm worried that outfield is going to get a lot thinner and I have McCormick on such a good contract.
Yeah, I try to take a pass across my leagues and see like who do I think is likely to get cut. You know, in an auto new league or a league like that where people are making cuts as the offseason goes on, sometimes you can get sort of a little preview of what things are going to look like. But I do try to look at, like, you know, even like I said, our listener league where people are going to enter their keepers tomorrow and it's just going to suddenly appear when the deadline passes. I try to look at that and figure out like, okay, are there going to be any aces out there? Are there going to be any top tier outfielders or third baseman? Like, is there any position I'm really worried about? But the reality is this only really impacts me a little bit. In general, like, if a guy is a good value, I'm going to keep them. And if they're not a good value, I'm going to cut them. Inflation and scarcity play into that because it changes how I value the guy. But unless I go look and I'm like, wow, I've got this overpriced, you know, let's look at, you know, the question we had before with Jose Ramirez. I have an overpriced Jose Ramirez, but literally every third baseman in this league is on a great contract and is an easy keeper, or is a low draft round cost and is an easy keeper. That might shift me a little bit, but it's got to be a pretty extreme situation and it doesn't come up very often.
Yeah. I mean, when we're talking about deep keepers going into the draft, I mean, we're potentially 100 players or over 100 players are already off the board, right? Like if all 12 teams in those listener leagues keep nine players, over 100 players are off the board, which means we're pretty much right from the first pick in get your guy territory. And I think that's a really hard thing to prepare for based on other people's potential keeper picks. Like you're just going to know like, all right, here are the players available. Here's the guy I'm taking. He might be, you know, Fantrax's or ESPN's 14th ranked player among the available players. But that's who I want because, you know, of the circumstances of my team based on the nine other players I already have in my roster. So it's just a really hard thing to prepare for.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's just, I think you can get yourself into trouble making predictions of what's going to happen. And so you do have to be a little careful about that. I do sometimes, like, I have a sense of which of my leagues, especially in auto new, like I know that I'm in some leagues where people are going to make really aggressive cuts. And I know I'm in some leagues where people are going to keep everybody. And that'll sometimes change my thinking on like inflation, things like that. But yeah, if you start trying to guess what people are going to do and you guess wrong, things could get ugly fast. So another question from somebody in the chat on the live cast here. This comes from Black Sox. How do you value prospects for a new auto new league? So this is, you know, not year three, year four, year two. It's like first year auto new league. How are you thinking about prospects? Pete, where do you go on this?
This is like our question, Chad, man. This is one we keep circling around. And for folks who don't know, Chad and I usually see, you know, eye to eye on this one. And it sounds obvious, but it's all about their proximity to the major leagues, right? Because every year you keep a guy, he's going to go up by a dollar if he doesn't reach the major league. So you might have, you know, I've been holding on to Marcelo Mayer now for a couple seasons in the Keeper Cut Listener League, got new. And at first I was like, awesome, I got this guy with so much upside for like a dollar or whatever it was. He's already up to $4, you know, he's coming off a shoulder injury. He had a terrible second half last year. So it's like, am I going to keep or cut this guy? And I invested resources in him over the last few years. So, you know, if it's a player who we all expect to be their opening day, I mean, Jackson Holliday, Junior Caminero, Wyatt Langford, those kinds of names, like I'm paying up, especially Langford with outfield being what it is, and Churio as well. I'm paying up for them. I expect to have them soon. But if we're talking real long-term guys, you know, your single A players, high A, whatever it is, I just don't have a lot of interest. Maybe if it's at the very end of an auction and I know I can get this player for a dollar, maybe he moves quickly, sure. But unless there's a clear path to playing time within the next, let's call it season, I don't have a lot of interest. If I miss out, I miss out. It is what it is.
Yeah, I generally agree. I'm a little bit less prospect happy than the average Ottonoo player. And so in general, my take on prospects is I want a guy who is like, I want guys who are going to be up this year and ideally early this year. Or if it's going to be a guy who's late this year or maybe next year, they better be an elite prospect at a low cost, right? That's sort of where I'm looking at this. But looking at prospects, I mentioned those mock drafts before. Guys like Langford, Holiday, Churio, Caminero, they are all going like $16 or $17 in these startup mocks. And that is, for my money, that's just too much. I get why people think they're worth that. If you look at their ADP on, you know, on Fantrax, something like that, like it matches. These are expensive players to buy into, particularly in keeper leagues. They are just so much riskier than other guys you can get for the same money. And I want to win now. Like I don't want to be building for the future. And on top of that, I think with a guy like, you know, let's say you spend $18 on Holiday, or Langford or any of those guys, like if they're good, they're good. But an $18 value on them is actually a good outcome, right? If they turn into a solid $20 player, that's a good outcome for them. And you have no surplus built up in them for next year. If they turn, you know, if they're Corbin Carroll and they turn into a $40 player, great. Now you've won the lottery, and that's awesome. That's fantastic outcome. You're much more likely to end up with a guy who's a $20 player. You're really happy with that, or they struggle and they turn out to be like more like a $10 player, which is still a good outcome, but you're underwater with them off the bat. And so like this is maybe a bad example because these prices are from before today when the news of Colt Keith signing broke, but like Colt Keith was going for $6. I would much rather be paying for him at $6. Now his price is going to go up because he basically just locked in an opening day job, but that's the kind of area where I want to be playing is a prospect who I think could be up opening day, could be up close to opening day, has that elite upside, but is in the like under $10 range. That's my jam.
Yeah, I wouldn't push back on that because, you know, I want to say things that I'd actually do. And I don't know if I'd go up to $18 on Wyatt Langford, right? But at least it makes sense to me based on proximity. I think something that really matters here that we should say before we move on to the next question, catchers and pitchers can kick rocks. Like I have absolutely no interest in stashing. Like you can offer me your $4 Salas, who's like 17 years old. I have absolutely no interest in those two positions, stashing them long term. It's got to be a position player and it can't be a catcher.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, pitchers who are going to be up soon is a different story. But yeah, I mean, pitchers and catchers who are more than a few months away, it's just there's too much risk there. I'm totally with you on that. Let's take another question from the chat. This one was funny. I started reading this and I was like, this league sounds like really familiar. It's from someone in one of our listener leagues. So Ken Will Jr. in our Listener League One, I believe, the one that's got the deadline tomorrow, says gets to keep 9 keepers plus 2 round keeper costs. So, you know, get a guy in the 25th round last year, he cost you a 23rd to keep this year. It's 5x5 roto, but it's on base percentage and innings pitched instead of average and wins. Wants to know, keep a 7th round Yoan Duran as his only closer or a 21st round Christian Encarnacion Strand? Ooh, that's an interesting one. Pete, you're really the pitching guy in the show, so I'm going to turn it over to you.
Don't put that pressure on me. I even though there are playtime concerns, I think I'm keeping Christian Encarnacion Strand here. I really like Yoan Duran. Rostered him last year in quite a few leagues. Obviously, the stuff is nasty, but like, it's not a whole lot of value there. I mean, you're getting him for a 7th round cost, and I imagine that's where he's going in drafts. I'd have to look. I know he's a higher end closer, but he's not, you know, he's not Devin Williams yet. So I get it. You want to make sure you get saves and all that kind of stuff. I thought about doing that with a super expensive Jordan Romano in one of my Ottonoo leagues, and thankfully, I decided not to do that. I'm not going to stress about saves. They always come up during the season. Instead, you have the chance to potentially get a really elite keeper in Christian Encarnacion Strand at a 21st round pick. So I think that's where I'd go, but I totally understand asking the question.
Yeah, I think I'm aligned. I'm not in that league going to keep an 8th round Paul Sewald. And I think Duran is better than Sewald, right? I'm not going to argue that, but it gives you a sense of sort of where I am on this. I think for me, there's another factor here, which is if you look forward a year from now, there's no world in which I'm going to be keeping a fifth round Duran next year.
Right.
A 19th round Encarnacion Strand could be a huge value next year, and 17th round the year after that, and 15th round the year. Like, you could be looking at a guy that's on your roster for a long time. On top of that, I think if you're wrong about him, the cost is pretty low. Your 21st round pick wasn't going to be that good anyways. And so it's not just Duran versus CES. It's Encarnacion Strand and a 7th round pick, whoever you're going to get in that 7th round, versus Duran and whoever you're going to get in the 21st. And I think from that perspective, I got to go with the bat for sure. Let's jump back to some of the questions we got ahead of time, because we got one that you teased earlier, and it came up on the last panel. They talked about second half breakouts in the last panel. They talked about Cole Reagans, who is the breakoutiest of the second half breakouts, and talked to Nick on the conference yesterday. So hopefully you guys caught that. But we got a question from Godzilla on the Auto News Slack. $11 Justin Steele or $9 Cole Reagans in Fangraphs points. And this is a tough one for me. And Pete, you and I sort of bandied about some thoughts on this earlier, and I think we may come down on different sides of it.
Yeah. Based on the notes, I think we will. I do want to preface it with the classic like cop-out, right? Where so much of this matters of who are your other keepers. Because if I'm also keeping like Tyler Glasnow and Walker Buehler, then I kind of want Justin Steele, because I think he's definitely a safer pitcher, whereas Cole Reagans, smaller sample, Tommy John, all that stuff. So I'll preface it with that. I think in a vacuum, I think I want Reagans, and especially the $2 over Steele. A show that I'm sure everybody here is very familiar with. I love the show, reference it all the time, Fantasy Baseball Today. Scott White talks a lot about the glob, right, in starting pitchers. And I don't want to piss off Cubs fans. I'm not necessarily suggesting that like Justin Steele is just your average pitcher. He's not. He's very good. But I think no one's going to be surprised, right, if Justin Steele is just a fine starter. He makes his 28 starts, has around a 3.5 ERA, and he's good. You know, gets a fair amount of wins. It's a decent team. I think there's serious upside with Cole Reagans. I think everybody associated with pitcherless seems to think there's a ton of upside with Cole Reagans. I mean, just look at the difference in swing strike rate between these two players. Reagans is up over 14%. Justin Steele is, I believe, below league average. He's around like 11.4 or something like that. I think Reagans has the upside to be elite, and Steele has the floor to definitely be very good. And so what are your other decisions that you're making there? If you can take on a little bit more risk or a lot more risk, go with Reagans. If you feel like I can't take on a lot of risk, I do have my Glasnow or my Buehler, just to use the same two names I referenced before, then yeah, I'll keep Steele and make sure I got my 140 to 80 innings or whatever it is of about 3.5 ERA and feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think I'm working on my rankings. I've been posting my tiered positional rankings over at Fangraphs over the last week, and I got a couple more spots to finish up. I'm working on starting pitching. I have Steele higher than Reagans, but not by enough that $2 really matters, if that makes sense. Like, they're close enough that I wouldn't worry much about the $2. I'm going to take the guy I like better. I think your point about like how does this pitcher fit in with the rest of your group is a good question. However, I'm still taking Steele. I do think it is accurate to say I think that, you know, Steele's projections around $17, $18, and he's probably safe to be around there, but unlikely to be $35. Whereas Reagan's projections are more like $12 to $13. And if he was $30 or $0, neither one of those would be totally shocking. I'd be a little shocked if he was zero, but you get the idea. But even if I look at just second half numbers, and that was what, you know, that's Reagan's, his last 12 starts with Kansas City, making that star turn, turning into the guy that has impressed everybody and has us talking about him. Steele had the better XFIP and the better strikeout rate minus walk rate. He's got a better track record, at least a longer one. Reagans was better down the stretch overall, but there was a big benefit that he had versus Steele in BAPIP and home run per fly ball rate. His BAPIP was fine. I think it was 280 something. It wasn't anything crazy, but his home run per fly ball rate was like 5%. It was super deflated. Playing in Kauffman helps with that, but it's still not going to stay that low. Steele had a really high BAPIP and a really high home run per fly ball rate down the stretch. I don't think that those are issues for him. They're not things that have been issues for him historically. I don't expect them to continue to be issues for him. And so I look at that, and I'm like, man, I kind of think the underlying numbers for Steele were better, even when Reagan's was, even if we're only looking at the best part of Reagan's season. And so I have to lean that way and go with him, especially considering he's the safer bet. The interesting trade-off here on that last panel, if you guys, for people who are listening to that, they talked about how they really want to see more than half a season of data before buying in on someone. But there's risk there, because if you wait for that more than half a season, now you're late buying in. Somebody's going to take the plunge earlier. In redraft, that doesn't matter a ton. Like, you miss out on a guy, you miss out on a guy. There is a much bigger value in taking that plunge early on a guy like Reagan's in a keeper league. Because if you're right, then you have him for years at a good cost. I still think in this case, the cost is locked in. It's either a $9 Reagan's or an $11 Steele. I'm going to spend the extra $2 to get the guy I'm more confident in that I actually think was better anyways. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question. If you're going Reagan's here, it's a little bit of a leap of faith. And you know, that Steele definitely has the safer floor. I would kind of caution against waiting for like such a substantial sample size for pitchers, because it is just such a volatile position, particularly the last few years, where like there's not a lot of players with the same amount of upside as Cole Reagan's. The stuff is disgusting. We saw it for a stretch last season, as you were referencing. It was very, very good. And I understand, you know, Steele definitely had the better number. He has elite command, and Steele did have a great season, but you have to ask yourself, like, is there another level to Steele? Because there's definitely another level to Cole Reagan's that he could potentially tap into. And that's ultimately the roll of the dice that you're taking there, that he's going to step forward more than he did last season. So just basing it on that sample could be a mistake.
Yeah, I'm not sure I believe that he's going to step forward beyond what he did last year in those last 12 starts. I think it's more of a, can he sustain? I mean, he was really, really good during those 12 starts, right? So like, this isn't some like, oh, he was a middling pitcher and how much better? Like, no, he was like an elite ace for 12 starts down the stretch. I don't think there's another level there. I think it's much more of a like, will he or won't he sustain it? And the reality is he could take a big step back from that and still be super valuable. So like, I'm not downgrading Reagan's. I'm not low on Reagan's. I was surprised a little bit to see that. I thought that I liked what I saw from Steele better when I dug into the numbers than I did from Reagan's. And so that's the thing there.
Yeah, I guess the question is, you know, is the step forward actually doing it for a complete season? Like, is that something that comes in the form of longevity? And yep. I mean, if he did that for even, let's say he's hurt all of April and just does it for May through September, I think he's going to be way higher than Steele on any play rater out there. So yeah. It's a great question.
Yeah. Let's go back to a question from the chat. We got a question from, I guess, Farks, P-H-A-R-X. How do you factor inflation into keeper salary auctions? There will still be $1 players. So do you allocate most of the keeper savings to top end players? It's a 12 team head to head 5x5 with 30 player rosters. I'm going to go after this one first. We've talked about this on the show before, and it's something I think a lot about. Yes, there will still be $1 players, right? And we talked about this with drafts as well. Like, the guys you take in the last round are still the guys you take in the last round. They do get inflated because a lot of people don't have last round picks. So those guys get, you know, in a draft, those guys get taken in the 25th round instead of the 30th round or something like that. But yeah, at the end of the day, the $1 guy is still going to go for $1 for the most part. What I would say is I always expect inflation to be highest on the top end guys. However, we had an episode, boy, 3-4 weeks ago, something like that. Pete, it was the one you were away for this one. And I had a couple of guys, Justin Vibber and Adam Scharf, came on the show. And there was a whole conversation about how, like, inflation, at least in auto new leagues, is not as concentrated at the top as you might expect. And his argument, Adam's argument, was actually like, we are undervaluing those top guys. We should be putting more inflation on them. I realize I'm talking through this. Inflation, for those who aren't maybe familiar with the concept, the idea here is once people keep guys, the guys they keep are undervalued at some level, whether it's their draft capital or their auction costs. Like, you're putting less money behind that player than they are worth, which means there is more money available to spend at the auction than there is talent available, which means that money gets concentrated higher on these players, right? So like, If you had, you know, a guy who was $10 might cost 15 because I have $15 to spend and there's nowhere else to spend it. So I'm going to use it here. So yeah, that's sort of what that is. I think what I see in practice is that the bottom end guys, inflation is pretty stable and low. Top end guys, it's not low, but it isn't as high as it could be. And there's a chunk in the middle where inflation tends to be highest. And I think as I'm planning for auctions this year, one of the things I'm trying to be more aware of and more cognizant of is I think I should concentrate my dollars at the top. I would rather pay the inflated cost for Acuna or for Betts or for Yordan Alvarez or someone like that than get stuck paying an inflated cost for like a $15 to $20 guy that is more middling.
Yeah, this is a pretty easy one because I'm just going to agree 100% with that. I'd rather just go right after those top guys. They're like a mercenary, right? Have them for a year. Yeah. If they're still way too much, you just cut them, move on, turn the page. I'm not going to do that for players that I might cut during the season, which would be a disaster.
Yeah. The other thing I'll note on this, and I've talked about this on the show before as well, is that I use two different inflation assumptions during the offseason. One I use for making keep and cut decisions, and it's on the low end, because what I don't want to do is think like, oh man, there's gonna be 30 or 40% inflation. I'm gonna have to pay way up for this guy, so I better keep him now. I don't want to do that. I want to assume a lower inflation cost and sort of bump up who I'm willing to keep, but not go crazy. But when I'm planning for the auction, I assume a much higher inflation rate so that I budget appropriately. Because the other end, what I don't want to do is go into the auction and be like, oh, you know, Acuna should be $70. He'll probably go for 80, and instead he goes for 90. And I'm like, oh, I'm out on all the top guys because I assumed inflation would be lower than it is. So I try to just, you know, if I'm budgeting for my team, take a higher number into the auction, thinking like, if I want this guy, it's going to cost me 50% inflation. If it turns out to be 30 to 40% inflation, hey, I can still buy that guy. I can save some money and I can reallocate that elsewhere. So that's sort of how I think about inflation in terms of auctions and keepers. Let's jump to another one. We've got, this one is from CB Hagen. Who should I keep? League is head-to-head, 10-team, 5x5 categories with OBP and quality starts. There's a 2-round price hike each year. He can keep one of the following. 24-round Nolan Jones, 21st-round CJ Abrams, 24th-round Yuri Perez, 17th-round Grayson Rodriguez. Also, how do you generally value hitters versus pitchers in keeper leagues? I mean, I can already see you eyeing a 17th round Grayson Rodriguez because I know how you feel about him. So is that where you're going, Pete?
I think I'm going 24.
You like all these guys. These are all guys you're high on.
Nolan Jones, not as much. I mean, we can talk about that later. I think at this price, yes, I'm 100% all in on Nolan Jones. At the price he's going lately in drafts, it's a little too pricey for me. I do love CJ Abrams, 21st round value. I think that's so good. I mean, he finally started running. It's all he had to do. He just started running. We've been waiting for it. Just please start running. And he did. And he was amazing. So if he's able to keep that up, obviously 21st round value would be great. But, you know, I've been talking about high end pitching and how it's hard to find. And Yuri Perez, man, if you can get him for a 24th rounder and that just goes up to a 22 next year and then a 20th and on, like him and Grayson Rodriguez, I'd take either. But if you're going to give me 7 rounds of value on Yuri Perez, I think that's where I'm going with this one.
Yeah. I mean, if you go just based on ADP, and I'm looking at Fantrax ADP right now, and keeping in mind that ADP does a bad job of handling like on base percentage, right? Because it's just any kind of league. That Nolan Jones is the biggest value gap between what he will cost you here and what he would cost you at a draft. I think I'm with you though that he's also a little bit riskier than the pitchers in this case, which seems weird because I think one of the questions here is how do you generally value hitters versus pitchers in keeper leagues? And I like Pete and I talk about this all the time. I favor hitters. They are more stable. They are more predictable. I would rather spend on a hitter than on a guy who might need Tommy John surgery tomorrow, right? Like that's just sort of where I go. In this case, I don't know. I could see Abrams being in that camp, but Jones, like He had a super high BABIP last year. He doesn't have a super long track record. There's a lot of strikeouts. Like, I like Nolan Jones. I have him on a bunch of rosters. I do think, as you said, his ADP right now is just his draft cost is too high. It should be lower than it is. But I do like him at a 24th round cost. That's great. But boy, Yuri Perez, I just feel like he is, health aside, because health of pitcher is always a thing, I just think he is less likely than Jones to like crash and burn. And so for me, this comes down to a question of, do I think Yuri Perez and Grayson Rodriguez are similarly productive, or do I think Grayson Rodriguez is a meaningfully better pitcher? And I'm a little bit torn on that, but I think it's torn. And I think it's torn enough that that 7-round value, I think you're right, that's probably where I go, is with the 24th round Perez.
Yeah, the strikeouts haven't arrived yet for Rodriguez. I'm confident they'll come, but like 7 rounds, is that's significant. Like if this is 2 years every year, Yuri's not going to cost earlier than that for another like 5 seasons. You had a lot of runway before Yuri's value or round cost would match what Grayson's is today. And Nolan Jones, the zone contact was well below league average. The strikeout rate was almost 30%. Like, look, I get it. He's in cores, stole a ton of bases. The barrel rate's crazy, but that's a huge leap of faith for me. Where he's going, yeah. ADP wise, and if I could have Yuri at the same cost in the keeper, I'm going to take Yuri Perez.
Makes sense to me. Let's go back to one of the questions we got on Twitter. This one comes from Kevin Conlin, Auto New Fangraphs Points League. It says, with Rhys Hoskins signing somewhere he should play a lot and not a bad park for him, which is true, are you keeping or who are you keeping or cutting out of a $32 Pete Alonso, $18 Rhys Hoskins, or a $10 Vinny Pascantino? He says, I realize Hoskins is probably the cut. I asked the question because I think $18 might be a reasonable price and I might have more success shopping Pascantino to try and upgrade elsewhere. This is a really interesting one. One of the things that's sort of fascinating about this is that Fangraphs points, because stolen bases aren't a factor, because it's more OBP based than average based, strikeouts don't really hurt you. I mean, they hurt you as a hitter anyways, but they don't hurt you especially much in this format. These guys are all a little bit more, all three of these guys are more valuable in this format than they are in most others. And so that does sort of shape things a little bit. Pete, are you cutting Hoskins? You cutting someone else? You shopping Hoskins? Like, what's your plan?
Yeah, it's like keep, cut, or shop. And I think that fits the bill for all three of these guys. I'm going to keep Pete Alonso. Of course I am. What you saw Matt Olson do last season, maybe not the combined runs and RBI just because of the lineup context, but Pete Alonso is just as capable of putting up such a season. So I'm going to hold on to him here. Hoskins, I'm going to cut. It's just too pricey after so much missed time. New ballpark, all that kind of stuff. Although maybe that contract wasn't nothing. Maybe that they clearly feel pretty good about him over the next 2 seasons. But it's too pricey for me. I'm cutting him, and I'm going to try and shop Vinny P for sure. And I'll shop Alonso as well if somebody wants to give me a ton for him. I think I'd be okay having Vinny P take over first base. Maybe get a little backup in the auction. But I'm keeping Alonso. I'm cutting Hoskins, and I'm shopping Vinny P.
Yeah, I think I'm generally with you. I think I'm just keeping Alonso and Vinny. And the reason for that for me is I think they're both good values. I think they're both good prices. And you can play them both, right? You have a utility spots. You can get both of these guys in your lineup. If Vinny isn't hitting, that $10 hit, just like it doesn't hurt that bad to have to cut a $10 Vinny Pascantino if he turns into a cut. But if he breaks out the way he's capable of, now you've got two potentially top tier first basemen. You have an option to trade one of them, to cut one of them next season. Like you can figure that out when the time comes. It's really, I think, a good place to be. What I would do if I were this team is I would cut Hoskins, and then I would at auction look for another option at util who is cheap. Ideally a high floor who, if Pascantino's really not cutting it, you could just like slot them into the lineup and it would be fine. You'd lose something, but not a ton. But I would keep both these guys. And like, look, if you come out of the auction and you're like, wow, it turns out I have three great utility / first base guys, trade one of them later. Like you can always trade. Like if Vinny Pascantino is hitting in April and you don't have room for him in your lineup because you have somebody else at your utility spot, a $10 Vinny Pascantino in April who's hitting the ball is going to get you a huge return, right? So I would wait and shop him then. I would take offers now, but I'm not aggressively shopping either any of these guys. I guess I would shop Hoskins before I cut him, but I don't think you're going to get a lot for an $18 Hoskins.
No, you're not getting anything for an $18 Hoskins.
No. Let's get back to another question from somebody watching live. This comes from S Malone 17. 5x5 head-to-head league with quality starts and OPS instead of, so it's quality starts instead of wins, OPS instead of average. Not OBP, OPS. Get to keep four. Three of his keepers are Corbin Carroll, Pete Alonso, Matt McClain. That is, yeah, I would keep those guys. And the last spot is between Yuri Perez or Bobby Miller. Who should I keep? There's no mention of cost here, so I'm assuming there is no cost here. I think I know who I would take. Who are you taking, Pete?
Wow, what a tough, brutal position to be in, to choose between these two awesome young pitchers. I'm going with Yuri Perez. I love both of them. I have nothing bad to say about either of them. I was a little surprised when draft season picked up at Bobby Miller's cost, but the more I've thought about it, the more we've gotten into draft season, and I know some folks aren't even in draft season yet, but kind of makes sense. But Yuri Perez, I just think there's almost no ceiling on this player. So I am all in on Yuri Perez as your fourth keeper there.
Yeah, I also think there's a small but meaningful difference in organizations there, and it's not that either of these are bad organizations for pitchers. They're both very good ones. The Marlins have shown a little bit more of a propensity to let guys throw a lot of innings, right? To go deeper into games, to throw, make more starts. Whereas the Dodgers seem to be lining up a like 18-man rotation so they can keep guys going in and out. And so I do think there's going to be a little bit more value upside. On the other hand, and the other piece of this is it's quality starts, not wins. So if the Marlins don't get another bat and don't hit the ball at all, it does not matter. That could make it like, I think in wins versus quality starts, Miller gets a boost that Perez doesn't, but it's quality starts that helps. I actually think like there's an interesting question here of whether Matt McClain should be an assumed keeper or whether you should keep both those pitchers. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, I tend to index on keeping bats over arms. And so if given only a keep four, and given that your top two keepers, by the way, are an outfielder and a corner infielder, keeping a middle infielder, a corner infielder, a middle infielder, an outfielder, and a pitcher is a nice way to start your roster. And so I like that piece of it. But I think it's worth considering whether McClain is a better keeper than Miller if you're keeping Perez.
I agree a ton with that. I mean, look, I like Matt McClain, and it seems like you get to keep him for free, so that's totally fine. But I would not press anybody for keeping Bobby Miller over him. The BABIP, the strikeout rate, everything like that. There could be a potential significant step back for Matt McClain this season. I feel like we're looking at him in draft season. A lot of people are just looking at him through those rose-colored glasses. There are some warts that I'd be a little worried about. Bobby Miller has a lot of pedigree, more than Matt McClain.
Yeah. So let's go back to, we had a question earlier that we talked about from Big Red Rocket, and Big Red had another question for us. Do you prefer a stars/scrubs approach in an auction, or do you prefer a more balanced approach? I got to be honest. My answer to this is sort of like, yes, I do sometimes prefer one and sometimes the other. But Pete, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I can't say that I ever go into any auction like knowing I'm going to do one strategy. It worked out in that league I referenced earlier, the Podcasters League. That was like the most expensive player I had ever purchased. It was like Ronald Acuna Jr. for, I don't know, I'm going to make up the price, like $63. And like at that point, you're kind of forced into, all right, I'm going to have potentially some stars and I'm going to potentially have some scrubs. So it's one of those things where I don't go into auctions thinking I'm doing one strategy or another. I'm looking for deals as they come up. I'm trying to be flexible within the auction. And ultimately just come out with the most well-rounded roster. I mean, ideally, I want what I just said. I want a well-rounded roster. So I guess if I prefer one, it's not to overindulge on, you know, three or four studs and then have to wait for an hour and a half in the auction so that I can start buying your Nick Pavettas and whatnot, not to fire shots at Nick Pavetta there. But so I guess I prefer balanced, but I don't know if Acuna is there or Julio Rodriguez is there. And I'm like, wait a second, they're about to go for $60. Like I'm going to get this player. but now all of a sudden I've kind of committed a little bit to a strat. It's only one player, but there goes, you know, almost 10%, 15% of my budget.
Yeah, I think where I come out on this tends to be that I rarely end up doing a true stars and scrubs, because I go that route when I feel like I have enough inexpensive but viable talent to go that route. So as an example, Auto New League 670, it's a Saber points league. I am in that league keeping a $69 Acuna, a $68 Soto, and a $39 Devers. That is a stars and scrubs start if I ever heard one, but it's because I have cheap Garver and Moreno at catcher. I have a cheap Christian Walker that I can plug in at first base. My middle infield of Steer, Horner, and Gorman is all relatively expensive. And then behind Acuna and Soto, I've got a bunch of sub $10 guys or $10 or less guys in Fraley, Kepler, Nootbaar, Friedel, Lamont Wade Jr., Kerry Carpenter, Jaron Duran. Like, I have a whole roster of relatively low price guys. My rotation includes Framber Valdez, George Kirby, and Max Fried all at $20. Pablo Lopez at 15, Kyle Bradish at like 4 or 5 or something like that. Like, so am I going stars and scrubs? Yes, from the perspective that I paid up a ton for 3 elite players, and then I'm gonna have to figure out how to fit things around that. But like, that's not a roster of scrubs, right? It works because I was able to build up a young core that I could a cheap core anyways, that I could go with big names around. In a startup auction, I tend to think that in my experience in startup auctions, those top players tend to be too expensive. And I find I can build a better, more well-rounded roster by playing a tier down or a couple tiers down from that. And instead of getting 2 studs and then have to go cheap, I can get 6 guys in the next tier and be better situated. So that's sort of how I typically would do it. But my goal is, when anytime I'm in a keeper auction league, my goal is to build a cheap enough core that I can go stars and scrubs without the scrubs being scrubs, if that makes sense.
Yes, stars and scrubs is excellent when you actually don't have the scrubs. It turns that's out right. It's pretty good. It works.
Yeah, it does. And but that's it. That's the goal in these leagues. At least for me, that's the goal.
Have no scrubs.
Have no scrubs. Yeah. So we had another question come in from Farks. Would you keep Devin Williams at $8 last season? This is the last season he can keep Williams over Matt McClain at $10 or Nolan Jones at $10 in a 5x5. McClain and Jones can both be kept in 2025 for $12 as well. But as I said before, Williams, this is it. So I mean, for me, this is like, we can talk about McClain and Jones. We've had a couple of questions about them already, so we can talk a little bit more about them. But like, I'm not keeping 1 year of Devin Williams versus 2 years of those guys. That, like, I'm going to take one of the hitters.
Yeah, I kind of expected that to be your response.
It's always my response, right?
I think I would maybe need more context. Like, if there are not going to be closers available and this is a 5x5 roto, like, you need saves. The idea of punting categories, it just, like, you need so much to go right to punt a category. And so if this is like, you know, if this is a 14 team 9 keeper and the best closer available is going to be, you know, whoever's closing games for the Nationals, like, I want to win, man. And I'm going to keep Devin Williams because he's not just a closer. He's arguably the top closer in fantasy. If this is a, you know, 12 team, keep 5 or something like that, there's no chance I'm keeping Devin Williams over McClain or Jones, because that the turnover value, like the ability to find a closer during the season is just going to be there. And at the end of the day, it's a category. You just need to find saves. It doesn't have to be elite Devin Williams. It's nice when it is. You get contributions here and there in the other categories, but you just need to find that number. You just need to find those saves. Maybe that comes in the form of Carlos Estevez, you know, pitcher list warrior from last season. It comes in the form of some guy you just find and scoop cheap. Nolan Jones or Matt McClain, as much as I'm not that big of a fan of them at those prices, sure. And they offer obviously a lot more long-term value because you can actually keep them further than this season. But I need a little bit more context, I guess.
Yeah, and the other thing that's missing here is whether it's head to head or roto. He says 5x5, but if it's 5x5 head to head, that pushes me even Williams more towards the hitters, because then it's like, if I don't get saves, I don't get saves. I'll just punt saves. You can't really punt saves. You know, I should say that. In my experience in Roto, you can punt so far as saying, look, I'm just going to aim for middle of the pack in this category. You can't fully punt and be like, yeah, I'm going to finish dead last in saves, get zero, and still think you're going to contend for the league.
And that's always how I interpret punting. So Yeah. If you're going to target middle of the pack, that's, to me, that's not punting. That's fine. You're just going to be fine finishing fifth in saves. You can still win.
But I think if that's your plan, then it does get into the question that you were asking before of like, is this a 14 team keep 10 league or is it a 10 team keep 4 league? Like, that's a really different question, but I think you can let Williams go and still get enough saves in most formats. You can let Williams go and get enough saves, but I'm still going with the hitter, but I think what Pete's saying is right. And you know, look at your league settings and get a sense. This is where we got that question before of like, do you look at who's being cut or who's being dropped or who's going to be available? Like, this is a good example of where you could hit an extreme where it's like, there will be no saves available. It's Williams or nothing. And if it's that, then you probably have to keep Williams and that's okay. But it's not my first choice. Not my first choice. So we got just a few minutes left here. I got a question here from Tim Canak. Tim hosts the Fantasy Aceball podcast. I was just on that a couple days ago. Yesterday, actually, I just posted. We talked some auto news stuff. But he sent us a question on Twitter, said, I just dropped a $21 Shane McClanahan, and it was tough, but I need the cash. How do you weigh holding injured guys through a season, and what kind of value hits should they take? I'm cutting a $21 McClanahan without a second thought.
Yeah, no, that would have been, I would have cut him a long time ago. Rip the Band-Aid off, man. It's devastating. We all love watching him pitch. He's awesome. But $21 is just way, way too much money to just be sitting for who knows how long, because he's not going to pitch this season. And then it's the freaking Rays. Who knows what are they going to give us, 70 innings in 2025? Like, I'm not holding a $21 Shane McClanahan. No chance.
His average price in those mocks I mentioned before, and granted, those are first year leagues. It's a little bit different than, you know, he'd be more expensive in a keeper, like a multi-year league, a third year, second, whatever. But in the first year, he's going for $4 on average in those drafts. I actually think that's low. I would pay higher than $4 to stash McClanahan. But just as another point of comparison, the average price in those drafts for Walker Buehler is around $15. McClanahan is better than Buehler. I'm not actually a particularly big fan of Walker Buehler. So to me, that $15 is too high. But like, if $15 is what I think is too high for Buehler, and I think McClanahan is better than Buehler, that suggests to me that $20, maybe up to $25 is what McClanahan's going to go for next year.
I won't have right? it anywhere then.
We'll see. I would guess it's that. But even if you're looking at that thinking, yeah, I want a $20 McClanahan next year, you don't need to pay 21 for him now. And even if you think like 21, he'll be $23 next year. I want him at 23 to 25 next year. I don't want to tie up $21 in this season.
That's so
to
much
to get market price on him next year. It's just not worth it. And so I think he's an easy drop. I think like we've had this kind of conversation. I actually talked to Tim a little bit about this on his pod the other day with Brandon Woodruff. They had a $17 Brandon Woodruff in that podcast.
See you later.
And they were debating. Yeah. It's like, no, forget it. Like, no,
not with that injury. No way. I'm not spending $2 on him at auction. No. I'm not doing it.
So I think at the end of the day, when it comes down to the broader question here of how do I think about injured guys, especially with pitchers where an injury likely means their season is lost, which is what we're dealing with probably Woodruff and definitely McClanahan. I'm just like, I don't know, McClanahan, because of what the injury is, because of what we can expect to come back, I might spend $5-6. Woodruff, given the uncertainty and the type of injury and stuff like that, I'm probably not spending anything. But like, I am going way under what I expect them to go for next year, right? If I'm going to pay for McClanahan or someone like that this year, they better be cheap enough that I have no debates or conversations or questions or anything next year. There shouldn't be any like, ooh, he's going for like 20 and I'd have to keep him at 21, or he's going for 20 and I have to keep him at 15. Like, no. I want to know that when I go into drafts next year, it's like, yeah, I have him for $8 instead of I paid $6 this year. I keep him for $8 next year. And it doesn't matter what the Rays are planning. It doesn't matter if he's still going to miss a little bit of the start of next season. Like, none of that matters at $8. He's an easy keep if he's pitching. that's what I want his price to be. So that's how I'm looking at those injured guys.
Yeah, and I'd add on to that, outside of auction formats, this is a great time to remind folks, and Chad, we've talked about this a lot, because especially because of the keeper leagues that we are in together, targeting those guys who are out for the season in your drafts, like your last round pick, especially if you have IL spots. Oh man, that's where it's at. That's why, you know, you in Roto League One have that super cheap class now, or you had that super cheap class now. Yeah. I mean, these are guys who are going to miss the season, so you can basically get them for free. And then all of a sudden you wait a year later and it's a massive bargain. So will I have Shane McClanahan in some of my drafts, not auctions? Sure. Especially if I have IL spots. Yeah. If I can keep him for 2025 at a 22nd round pick or 24th round pick or whatever it is, I'm all in on that. But I'm not, if it's going to cost me at all this year, no, not happening.
Fair enough. I think we are basically at our hour here. So I'm expecting Miles to just appear. And there he is.
That was so fast.
Well, I, you know, listening to what you guys were just talking about with injured pitchers, especially, I was dying to ask you guys. I mean, Clayton Kershaw, we're all expecting great things from him this year, right? Like, he's fine, right? He's totally fine. He's going to pitch.
He's a guy I would take late in, like, maybe not in a draft unless I have IL spots, but like for a dollar at the end of an auto new auction, if he's going cheap, I would grab him. Because, like, I'm not going to doubt Clayton Kershaw, right? Of all guys, it's like, if he says he's going to pitch this year, it may not be till August, but like, you feel like he's going to show up. And when he shows up, everyone's going to be like, oh, I don't know if he's going to be ready, blah, blah, blah. And then he's going to throw like 7 straight quality starts of with an ERA of like 2. And you're going to be like, oh, right, that's what he always does.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in the like good luck charm on the bench or in the IL spot. And so if I have an IL spot to put him in, you best believe I'm going to put him in there. And I believe he'll be rooting for my fantasy team all year long. Chad, Pete, thank you guys so much for jumping on, for answering so many questions. I know so many members of the community have keeper leagues and you know, deadlines this week and stuff. So I hope you guys really help them make some tough decisions. So thank you guys so much for jumping on here.
Thanks,
you. Thanks, Miles.